puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Well, it seems as if a Scotsman is at the centre of today's abandoned Manitoba story. Gordon Goldsborough, who's also of Scottish descent, joins us now. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadja.
Is that true? Absolutely. Are you?
Well, it's kind of a borderline. My grandfather came from Northumberland, which is right on the border with Scotland, but I think the purist would say, no, not quite close enough.
All right. Well, I don't want to offend the purist, so I'll take that back. But back to today's Scotsman. Who are we talking about?
Well, he's a fellow named Alexander Melville. He came to Winnipeg in 1903, and he practiced as an architect. And in fact, many of the buildings that he designed while he was here are still standing. And this week, we're going to talk about two specific types of buildings for which he was especially prolific, including a vacant one at Emerson.
So what was the first type of building?
Well, Melville seemed to have a penchant for designing fire halls. You know, in the early 20th century, most of Winnipeg's buildings were made of wood, which, of course, is very flammable. And the area that an individual fire hall could serve was fairly small, you know, mainly because the firefighting equipment had to be hauled to the site of the fire by horses. You know, so they needed fire halls all over the city. And each of these fire halls was given a number, starting with number one, which was the central fire hall in the heart of the Exchange District. That site, by the way, is gone. That building is gone, and the site is now a public park.
Did Melville design fire hall number one?
No, actually, number one and also number two were built before he arrived in Winnipeg. His run as sort of the go-to designer of fire halls started with number three, and it was built the year after he arrived, 1904. The same year, 1904, he designed a bunch more. He designed number five, number six, number seven. And in fact, over the next 10 years, he designed number eight in 1906, number nine in 1909, number 10 in 1910, number 11 in 1910, number 12 in 1911, 14, 15 in 1914. Well, in addition to all these ones in Winnipeg, he also designed the St. James Fire Hall and the St. Vitel Fire Hall. So, you know, altogether, he designed 13 fire halls altogether, nearly all of the ones that were in Winnipeg. And that seems to be where his fire hall building career ended.
Why? He was on such a roll.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it had anything to do with any concerns over his abilities. Rather, I think the demand for the fire halls had been fully met. You know, essentially by 1914, all of the parts of Winnipeg were adequately supplied with firefighting service.
How many are still in use as fire halls?
Well, of the 13 fire halls that Melville designed, 10 are still standing today, and two of those are still in use, either as a fire hall in one of them, or the other one is an ambulance station. The rest, well, they've been converted to other purposes. So some of them are private homes. There's a couple that are churches. There's one that's a daycare center. And in fact, two of them are museums. So listeners might be aware of the St. Vitel Museum, which is in fact housed in the old fire hall. But maybe the most noteworthy one is the Winnipeg Firefighters Museum over just off Higgins Avenue, a wonderful facility. And it's based in an old fire hall.
So when his fire hall gig ended, what did Melville turn to next?
Well, he did design a lot of other building types. You know, he designed churches and apartment blocks and hotels, theaters, office blocks, schools, private homes. But, you know, his second major design monopoly came in the late 1920s with another important public utility, the Telephone Exchange Building. And in fact, in 1928, he designed a Telephone Exchange Building at Emerson, the one that's our featured building today.
Tell us more about what happened in a Telephone Exchange Building.
Well, an exchange is essentially where the connection between two telephone users is made. You know, when telephones first arrived in Manitoba, and that was in 1878, they used what was called a manual exchange. And the idea was that a person who wished to make a phone call picked up their telephone receiver, told an operator to whom they wished to be connected, and the operator made that connection. By comparison, an automatic exchange enabled a person who wished to make a call to basically dial the number themselves, and the machinery made the connection without the intervention of a human.
When did Manitoba get its first automatic telephone exchange?
Well, there's an interesting story. The first automatic exchange in Manitoba was in Brandon, and that occurred in 1917. And Winnipeg had to wait another 3 years. It got its first automatic exchange in 1920. But once the changeover occurred, it was rapid. So in fact, listeners may not know this, but Winnipeg was the first large city in Canada to have a fully automatic service, completely, the whole city covered by automatic service by 1926. And of course, this drove the demand for automatic exchanges elsewhere around the province. And so in the late 1920s, you see a building boom for these telephone exchange buildings where all the necessary circuitry would be housed.
Did Manitoba have a lot of telephones at that time?
Well, you know, I was interested in that question as well. I found some statistics on the number of telephones in the province. The statistics started in 1908 and it went to 1933. And over this 25-year period, the number of phones increased by 400%. Actually, that sounds like a lot, but it really was pretty trivially small compared to today. You know, so for example, I calculated by the mid-1920s, there were about 10 people for every telephone. Now, and you think about that, compare that to today. I suspect the statistic is closer to one telephone per person. You know, most of us carry a phone of our own. So, you know, there's still many, many fewer in the 1920s. And, you know, that's a real big change.
Bringing this back to Alexander Melville, how many telephone exchange buildings did he design then?
Well, it's a hard question to answer because I've been researching this and I have a list, but I don't think it's a complete list. I've found so far 27 of them that he designed, and these were built between 1928 and 1941 all over rural Manitoba. But because the records are a little harder to find for rural Manitoba, I'm not confident at all that my list is complete.
Did he have like a signature style when it came to his telephone buildings?
Well, you know, we talked a few weeks ago about the early Safeway stores here in Winnipeg, you know, and I said that they had sort of a signature look that you could distinguish them by. And yeah, in fact, Melville's telephone buildings do kind of have a similar look. You know, if you take the one at Emerson as an example, they were typically long, narrow brick buildings that faced the street. And on the side of the building facing the street, there were two windows and a door. And each of them had sort of a decorative half circle of bricks above them. And each of the half circles had sort of a diamond in the center of it. So if you see something that looks like that, it's a good possibility that it was one of Melville's buildings. But the later ones that he designed in the late 1930s actually looked a lot like Safeways. And in fact, when I first saw them, I thought, oh, this must be an old Safeway store. And the reason is that the Safeways had this sort of decorative metal awning over the top of them at the front. And these phone ones did as well. But they went one step further. They also had these decorative awnings over the windows and across the door as well.
How many of these telephone buildings are still in existence?
Well, of the 27 exchanges that I have found so far, there just six of them are still standing. In addition to the one at Emerson, there are ones at Souris and at Boisevane. And three of them are here in Winnipeg.
And are any of them still in use for telephone purposes?
Well, not many. The one at Emerson, as far as I can tell, as I said, is vacant. It's an empty building. The ones at Boisevane and Souris are used, but not for telephone purposes. So the only one that I've been able to find, just one that's still in use for telephone service, is actually here in Winnipeg in River Heights. There's sort of a circuitry building in the middle of a residential neighborhood, and it has that characteristic awning over the door and the windows. Very attractive. The rest of them, well, they've simply been probably replaced by newer buildings. And it's probable that's because the technology has improved to the point where you don't need as many buildings to support all the exchanges in Manitoba. You know, so compared to the 20s and 30s when Melville was busy designing them, there's probably just simply many fewer of these buildings in existence.
Gordon, thank you for this.
You're welcome, Nadja.
Let us know about the clue for next week.
Well, listeners probably know that I'm a collector, and one of the things I collect are bricks, but not just any bricks. They have to be ones that were made in Manitoba. You know, and at one time, there were numerous places around the province where bricks were manufactured. Today, there are none. So next week, I'm going to talk about an MHS project that is reconstructing the lost history of Manitoba brickmaking.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Gordon.
We'll talk to you then.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in my